first chapter of 1 Peter, that's where we'll spend or base our text tonight. I want to talk a bit tonight on the incredible outcomes of suffering. 1 Peter 1, beginning in verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to His great mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to obtain an inheritance which is imperishable and undefiled and will not fade away, reserved in heaven for you, who are protected by the power of God through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And though you have not seen Him, you love Him. And though you do not see Him now, but believe in Him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls. God's role in our suffering is one of the great perplexities of the Bible. Job and his friends throughout the book wrestle with this question. After being afflicted beyond measure, Job is told by all his friends that he is being afflicted because of his sin. It's difficult to understand exactly how God allows Satan to destroy all that Job has and test him, and yet we see in different ways, or in different places throughout Job, he remains steadfast. From chapter 2, verse 3, God saying to Satan regarding Job, and he still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to ruin him without cause. And then at the end of the chapter, with his friends and family that had known him before, coming to console and comfort him for all the adversities the Lord brought on him, and then his latter days were blessed more than the first. We see another well-known example of suffering in the New Testament with Paul. And his thorn in the flesh, which was again part of God's will. God had allowed a messenger of Satan to be sent to Paul, despite Paul's earnest attempts in prayer to have it removed. And we see from the context that this was helpful to Paul in keeping him from being conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations that he'd mentioned. And so again, God's will that one should suffer, ultimately for their own good, with to some extent, Satan being the instrument or the tool used. And then in 1 Peter, throughout the whole book, it makes it clear that it's God's will for us to suffer in various ways and through different trials. From verse 6 in the passage that we just read, if necessary, you've been distressed by various trials. And so that it begs the question, why is it necessary? What is this actually for, and who is the one that's deeming it necessary? And these are tough questions to answer. And from chapter 3 and verse 17, similar phrasing, for it is better if God should will it so that you suffer for what is doing right rather than for what is doing wrong. And again in chapter 4 and verse 19, therefore those also who suffer according to the will of God shall entrust their souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right. Does God will that we lose our job or that we lose a loved one or a close relationship or lose someone to death? Does He will that other tragic events occur on the earth that are outside of our control with war-torn countries or rampant disease in impoverished places or lack of food? Those aren't questions that we're going to be able to answer tonight. But if we learn anything from Job, it is to be incredibly careful how we view God's hand in all of this and what the ultimate reason and purpose is behind all of it. And what we can learn from 1 Peter is that we are not only to know that we should be aware of suffering, but we should expect it. And there are a few different things we'll look at tonight that are ultimately great triumphs and outcomes of this suffering. 1 Peter 4, verse 12. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. So again, this is not something that should shock us, but rather something that we should expect, and not just on occasion, something that we should see time and time again. We aren't providentially sheltered from all wrongs, all hurt when we become a Christian, But rather, we should expect just the opposite. We should expect to be forged through these trials. And 1 Peter, the letter that Peter's writing here, is pointing ultimately to Christ as the primary example of what it means to suffer for righteousness. And so in chapter 2, he looks at the example of another unjust suffering. Chapter 2, beginning in verse 20. For what credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? But if when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And similar ideas seen just a bit further in chapter 3, verse 9. Not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. And so ultimately, God is calling us to live in the exact nature of his Son. One who was able to turn away from payback or from wanting to solve or fix all the heartaches and ultimately wrongs by others that he received in this life. But rather to be meekly entrusting our souls to the one who judges righteously. And he even encouraged them in chapter 3 from verse 13. He says, who is there to even harm you for following after what is good? And yet still we know from the verse following that we will experience those trials. So we know what our response would be. We know that we're to expect it time and again. We know that there is some design behind all of it from God. And so we'll look at why, through a few different points, why these things are ultimately so beneficial for us. So back to verse 6, in this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials. The trials that we face are not going to be the same time and time again. There was an experiment done in Arizona called Biosphere 2. And in it, scientists tried to recreate the ecosystem that is Earth in a more concentrated environment to see if they could engage in space exploration and replicate environments elsewhere. And so they had recreated just about everything that we have here on Earth, deserts, rainforest, even an ocean within this biosphere. But the one thing that they couldn't replicate was wind. And over time, the effects became evident. Some of the acacia trees that were inside the biosphere, though they had grown tall and without much trouble early on, weren't able to sustain. They bent over, some of them even snapped. They weren't able to produce the reactionary wood or the strengthening wood that allows them to maintain their nature as we see them, you know, every day. And so, despite simulating heat and cold and nearly everything else within this small ecosystem, without the one element of wind, ultimately it proved fatal to part of their plan. And so there are a variety of ways for us as well in which we are tested that are all part of God's design for us. And despite the fact that we may think it'd be nicer or better if we weren't exposed to some of these things, we know that all of them play a role in our ultimate strengthening as Christians. In 1 Peter, there are several different depictions of struggles for men on earth. He talks about subjects being tested by kings, by authority, slaves by their masters, both kind and unkind, wives by unbelieving husbands, being falsely accused in the faith and having to give a defense for it, suffering scorn and ridicule from former friends after changing a way of life. And so we are to experience a vast array of different trials, all by design, so that our faith may be purified. We also know that our trials are going to be grievous. Another example happens to be another plant example. The sisal plant grows in Yucatan, Mexico. And it's very strong. It's very, very hard, tough soil that it grows in. And extreme heat and wind. But it produces a very profitable fiber used for twine. And so some Americans had seen that and thought we may be able to replicate this in more suitable conditions. So they took this up to Florida to try and replicate this plant at a higher rate the trees grew once, or the plants again grew large, much larger than before. Business profit promised great returns until the day of harvest came. And when it came time to take the fiber from those leaves that were vital to the creation of that twine, the leaves collapsed into a soft pulp because they weren't forged in the same environment that they were used to before. They learned that what made them so strong was the adverse conditions that they had originally observed them in. And so the plant lost its toughness because it didn't have to struggle to grow. And it was ultimately useless for the very purpose it had been set to grow for. And so I was thinking as well, I got done running a race in end of March. And I trained a little bit better for this one, but lack of training, as I think I may get from my father, he can share some details of yesterday, showed up right around mile 20. I'd gone through and I already felt much better about this race, and then I hit it. I hit the wall. And I knew it was because I hadn't pushed through on my training. I'd made, I think, one 20-mile training run on a weekend. I thought, well, this is better. I usually get to like 16 or 17. And then sure enough in the race, I thought, why did I do this? You know, we got six more miserable miles, and it's, you know, just me that I have to blame. So the same example, we have to be willing to endure that no matter what, because we know it produces a better version of ourselves. And that's all part, I believe, of God's plan for the various trials that we see in this life. And again, reminds us of the thorn in Paul's flesh. He had reason to glory because of the surpassing greatness of the revelation that presumably he'd seen, but he was held back ultimately for his own good by that thorn in the flesh to keep him from exalting and to keep him humble. He had prayed intensely that it be removed from him, but what was God's response? He said, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." The thorns will hurt, but they're there for a reason. Another example is given of an emperor moth that a man observed coming out of its cocoon, and it was struggling to get out of the cocoon, and the man thought, I'll help it out. So he took a pair of scissors and cut open the end of the cocoon, and sure enough, the moth emerged with ease. But it emerged with a swollen body and shriveled wings. It can never fly. And so the struggle that comes from exiting that cocoon and the way that God designed it, that man had robbed him, that moth, of the health and strength that it needed to ultimately do the job that it was designed to carry out. By depriving the moth of struggle, he deprived the moth of health. It was also a little bit helpful keeping that in mind and preparing for tonight, because I thought, man, this is tough preparing for this lesson, but I think this is going to come back to me another time. You know, we got three guys here that do this pretty regularly, but I am thankful for the opportunity. Paul needed that same pain of the thorn. We need the pain of the trials. If it were mildly unpleasant, it would never produce the desired effects that we want in our lives. And ultimately, we know that God's in control, and he won't let us be tested beyond what we can bear. We know that relief will come at the right moment. So we see that we'll have a variety of trials and that there will also be grievous. But beyond this, we'll also see that the trials are brief. Again, from verse 6, the phrase is, "though now for a little while." And so there's a couple of perspectives that we can take on the idea of them being brief. Certainly in terms of even our own lives here. No trial is completely continuous. There are times of respite, times where we're distracted from the pain, times where we do experience comfort from some of God's other blessings that he bestows upon us. And as we just sang, read again the first verse from Day by Day. "Day by day and with each passing moment, strength I find to meet my trials here. Trusting in my Father's wise bestowment, I've no cause for worry or for fear. He whose heart is kind beyond all measure gives unto each day what he deems best." And so it is God mixing in that toil and pleasure and giving us the right balance of what we can sustain that allows us to grow. And again, referencing 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. So He knows your limits. He knows my limits. Yes, it will be painful, but it'll also be brief, and relief will come exactly when it is needed. It's certainly also brief from God's perspective. And the man who had outlined this lesson was talking about a time where he'd experienced a tremendous earache, pain that he couldn't even adequately describe or portray. And he kept thinking to himself when he was just clutching the heat pad next to his ear, looking for some relief. It'll be over soon. It'll be over soon. Surely the pressure will be too great and something will give. And eventually, of course, he was right. The pressure gave away. But isn't that how we have to view the trials of this life? In the moment, they are intense. They are unpleasant. But we know they are so brief in the grand scheme of things. As well, there was an example of a child that had to go for a checkup with a peanut allergy. And this is not something I'm well versed in, but I'm sure some of you know what those checkups are like, where they actually have to test what the allergic reaction is to those allergies and actually bring it into contact with the skin, the oils. And so for the girl in this example that I'd listened to, There's no way to adequately explain why these things have to take place. So you can just look to her parents and know that they're there to hold her hand and comfort her for those uncomfortable 15 minutes. And there's no true reasoning that can be understood in that moment. But ultimately, it's there for better health and an accurate, you know, assessment of the situation. And that's what we see throughout 1 Peter, that we're pilgrims here, that this is not our home, that we're just passing through, but we can see our home just beyond Jordan with no more pain and ultimately rest in God. And so trials are grievous, and they're going to come to us in various ways, and they will be short, and ultimately they lead to a purified faith. Again, from chapter 1, in this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And so, of course, the well-known example and analogy of gold, when it comes out of the ground, is not clean. There's a lot of other alloys and dirt that have to be removed from it. And it's passed through that fire at intense heat, so that the gold, the true gold, will sink to the bottom and everything else can be removed from the top, the dross. And that's, in a very real way, what God sees in us when we decide to come from the world to Him. He sees the pure gold that's in there, but it's mixed in with a lot of other things that have to be removed. And so through these trials, we can remove those distractions, whether it's our job, or money that we trust in. You know, we're worried about not being able to make the next payment that's coming up. We have to go into debt to figure something out. And then all of a sudden, God provides a way of escape, provides a new job, provides a raise, provides support in some other way. Or maybe we hang on too much to our position or our influence, or ultimately ourselves. Too much arrogance and self-reliance. And these are all part of the refining process of getting rid of these things, so that when we pass through, we'll have a pure, undefiled faith in God. Turn to 2 Corinthians 1. We'll see an example of that. 2 Corinthians 1, verse 8. For we do not want you to be unaware, brethren, of our affliction which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life. There's the fire. Indeed, we had the sentence of death within ourselves, so that we would not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. And there's the gold. So Paul went through trials that we can only imagine, here being a small example of one, through stonings and beatings and being homeless, shipwrecks, going hungry, despairing even of life itself. And yet, he knew, as well as we can know, that it was all for the greater purpose of a stronger faith and a pure, undefiled trust in God. And in addition to the trials coming at us in various ways, being painful, being brief, and leading to a stronger faith here on earth, ultimately they result in praise and honor and glory, both here, but also to come. Back to 1 Peter from chapter 4, he mentions, if you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed because the Spirit of glory and of God rest on you. So when we go through our darkest trials, being blasphemed for the name of Christ, we can know that that is when we are at some of our most near times with God. Similar to Stephen, when he was about to be killed and he saw Jesus standing at the right hand of God. Like Stephen, in that moment, we can know that in those moments we are close to God. We're experiencing the same things that ultimately we were called to experience, like we had looked at a bit earlier in chapter 2 and in chapter 3. But ultimately, the greater glory is not until later. In verse 12 and 13, we won't always know the reason for the testing here, but we know that it's worth it. And Paul speaks on this in various examples throughout the New Testament. We'll read a few for sake of time, that talk about the ultimate glory to come that can't even be compared with the weight of suffering here. From Romans 8, verse 18, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God." In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16, "So we do not lose heart. Though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal." And again in 2 Timothy chapter 4, beginning in verse 6, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." And that is ultimately what we focus on. We fix our eyes on the finish line while we're burdened here with all the sin that's presently around us, vying for our attention. When we're surrounded or weighed down by the sins of our past that hold us back, that prevent us from forgetting what lies behind us so that we can reach forward to what's ahead. When we're attacked by those around us for just the fact that we are running the race. We don't look for lasting comfort or peace here, although God gives us some. But no, we fixate on the end. And we think how we can reflect the glory of Christ and bring glory to Him as well, as God assures us that He will be with us here and with us to the end, and ultimately receiving the crown of glory that we will cast before Him. Turn with me to Revelation chapter 7. Revelation 7, beginning in verse 9, this will be one of our last passages this evening. Verse 9, "After these things I looked, and behold a great multitude which no one could count, from every nation and all tribes and peoples and tongues, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, and palm branches were in their hands. And they cry out with a loud voice, saying, Salvation to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. And all the angels were standing around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures, and they fell on their faces before the throne and worshipped God, saying, Amen, blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our God forever and ever. Amen. Then one of the elders answered, saying to me, "These who are clothed in white robes, who are they? And where have they come from?" I said to him, "My Lord, you know." And he said to me, "These are the ones who come out of the great tribulation, and they have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. For this reason they are before the throne of God, and they serve Him day and night in His temple. And He who sits on the throne will spread His tabernacle over them. They will hunger no longer, nor thirst any more, nor will the sun beat down on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb in the center of the throne will be their shepherd, and will guide them to springs of the water of life. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." That is something that we should all look forward to. When we get the reward for all the suffering in this life, that is the true end goal. In addition to the betterment of our faith here, the encouragement that we can be to one another, ultimately our answer for all this suffering, the questions that we posed at the beginning, will be found when we can be with Him one day. But there is another point to suffering as well. Acts 17. Acts 17, verse 26. "And He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for Him and find Him, though He is not far off from each one of us." This reminds me of several of the thoughts that we've been seeing in Ecclesiastes recently, and ultimately how man, through various means, is just searching for meaning here. They're grasping at everything to try and find something that is worth living for, that is true, that is right. And so maybe that's why you're here tonight. If it's suffering that's brought you here because you can't find comfort in the things of this world, if you're searching from deep within to find truth, strength, and wisdom and answers, you're coming to the right person. Seeking out God is that ultimate answer. And so if we can help you in assisting your search of the solution to all these answers, please come forward as we stand and sing.